Mini episode 491 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Royalty Tours USA, your ultimate resource to traveling in style to attend sporting events. Follow them on the web at royaltytours.blogspot.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini-episode number 491 of the FDH Lounge. Today, you have FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Ben Chu coming your way to talk early season NBA, how it is going for the 2014-2015 campaign. Of course, as you know from his previous appearances on the show, Ben is also managing editor of thatnbalotterypick.com, the web's finest hub for the intersection of sports and pop culture. And again, there's some excellent projects that have been launched at thatnbalotterypick.com in the last year, and now we'll be talking about that specifically some more with this basketball season. We'll be getting into that with the analysis of the season. And here he is, my good friend Ben Chu, joining us all the way from Portland, Oregon. Ben, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing good, Rick. How you been?
Been very good. Been looking forward to breaking down hoops with you on the show. And again, I kind of teased it there. The podcast that's on the site, you just relaunched it as the Moving Pick Podcast. So you've got that going on. TNLP Originals got some great original video on there. A wonderful parody video, which just kind of kicks the whole thing off. You're setting the bar high with that. So in addition to all the other usual features you got going on there, you've been doing a tremendous amount of introducing some new stuff.
Yeah, of course, Rick. And, you know, we always try to strive and do the best we can on with the website. And you know, Moving Pick Podcast, you can follow it on Twitter now, Moving Pick Pod. We'll probably, on most months, have a new episode every Friday, where we essentially do a little bit of a mix of what we do, where we talk serious basketball, not serious basketball, and, you know, some random stuff that we might find through the week. So with the podcast itself, there's going to be some fun. And you know, too, and we've been in discussion, too, that we're going to be very heavily hitting the Vine game on Twitter and Facebook. So be ready. There will be some funny stuff coming up. And as you probably know by now, we're in the heart of the season, and I'm ready to talk some basketball.
Excellent. And you have been certainly a great innovator with the website and one of the foundational pillars of the 21st Century Media Alliance. So I'm looking forward to seeing everything as it continues to evolve there. And like I said, I've been looking forward to breaking down this hoop season with you. As everyone knows on the show here, I have actually been given a reason to live basketball-wise coming into this season, of course, with the revived fortunes of my Cleveland Cavaliers. So in addition to covering the show, as I do from time to time, I actually have a reason to be enthusiastic about it, as my team, of course, entered the season as, in a lot of quarters, at least the co-favorites, I'd say, to win the NBA championship this year. And the new big three, as it were, of LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Love. Some mixed reviews, particularly in the first week, that game against the Knicks, the home opener, looking like the outlier of all outliers based on how the Knicks have played ever since then. But with how everything has gone, again, it is somewhat kind of reminiscent of the first year of the big three in Miami. And that has, I think, of course, tempered expectations a little bit, but what are you thinking out of what you've seen out of the team thus far? It's obviously sort of a blend of some great peaks in terms of what they could be capable of in May and June, and also some points in time where the chemistry is just non-existent.
Right, and as everyone knows, especially when you have a team like this still coming together, because there's a lot of new pieces from this team from last year, and it feels overall that they were trying to feel their way through, like, early in the portion of the season. But last night they were able to take out the Atlanta Hawks with relative ease, hitting their first, I believe, 10 three-pointers of the game. But It seems to me there's going to be some growing pains. Everyone knows that with this team. But one thing we have to notice is that it's early. And when you have to, it's in any work environment in real life, you have to get used to your coworkers. And right now LeBron is getting used to playing with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and Dion Waiters and the rest of the cast and crew. And I think right now we're just seeing the beginnings of the motion offense under David Blatt. And I think the real thing we're going to have to look for during this year is that who's going to be that fourth guy? Because I've always talked about this on these podcasts, and you have as well, that in the NBA, to be successful, you really need three legitimate scorers and that fourth guy who can put in enough to make your team complete.
That's very interesting that you raise that point. To me, it's somewhat reminiscent of what has been brought up on the show previously by FDH Lounge dignitary Ken Detweiler in his talk about baseball. And he, in terms of being somebody who's coached baseball at many levels, as well as being an analyst on the program, has had a very interesting take that when he wants to know about the strength of a lineup, he looks to see who the number five guy is. Who's the guy protecting the cleanup hitter? And that tells you a lot about the depth of that. That sounds a lot like what you're saying about the fourth scorer, and that's really something that can set a team apart and be a difference maker. Obviously, everyone had thought coming in that that man was going to be Dion Waiters. There was a lot of supposition about whether or not he would be in the starting lineup, how good of a fit he would be. And unsurprisingly, they've moved him to a bench role where he sort of has a chance to be sixth man slash captain coming off the bench. Do you see him thriving and being the number four guy in that role, or are some of the questions about his temperament that he's shown thus far in his career a little bit too troubling to make that assumption?
I think at this point you can assume he will be that guy in that fourth role or that virtuoso sixth man off the bench. When I like to talk about basketball, I don't really tend to bring up off-the-field activities or controversy or rumors unless, you know, it's well-founded. But I think you have to look at this team. They're going to have to get some consistency from their bench. As you can understand, back in the old Miami Heat days with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, they struggled with that in their first couple of years, but then they were able to acquire pieces that would be much more super. And especially for anyone that knows basketball, if you know the motion offense, you have to get good three-point shooters. And while they do have Mike Miller and they do have the rookie Joe Harris, they still need a guy who can consistently shoot threes. And I think there'll be someone down the line. I don't know who yet, but it seems to me that that might be their missing piece at this point.
Well, it's very interesting that with the makeup of the team, they happen to have a guy in Kevin Love who is both a floor spacer and a guy who logs a lot of rebounds underneath. So it shows his ability to get around in the offensive part of the court and to be where he needs to be. What's very interesting is that I can tell you that from being in Cleveland and from seeing some speculation in the media that we might be moving to a circumstance where the aforementioned rookie Joe Harris might be the starting shooting guard, and that they might be counting on trying to use him a little bit as a floor spacer in that role, particularly because the signing of Ray Allen has not materialized yet. But that as opposed to putting Sean Marion there, which is not a long-term move because obviously he's supposed to be helping out LeBron with his minutes at the three, that might be Joe Harris. Do you see them doing something as radical as going with a rookie for a lot of minutes in a starting role this year?
It sounds sort of crazy when you put it that way, but let's not forget, too, that when Boston was starting Rajon Rondo before their championship run, that you're sometimes forced into that matter. And I remember, too, me and you talked away from the podcast regarding the Harris pick. A lot of people were confused by it because this was prior to the Love deal happening about what his role would be. But let us not forget, when he was at the University of Virginia, one of the top three-point shooters in the nation, and I believe, if I'm correct, during his time there, he was top five in all time in the University of Virginia history in three-point shooting. So worst-case scenario for Harris, he can set the four, be moved around. He can be that guy. The real question for them is that they're going to have to figure out what rotation works the best to start. Is it better to have Marion on the floor, who's a way better defender at this point of his NBA career? Or would it make more sense to get a guy who can spread the floor and give that ability? And it's going to be interesting, especially when you use this motion sort of spreadish type offense. You're going to have issues. And I think, especially with all the pressure that was on LeBron early on in the season, you're going to expect issues like this to arise. But overall, looking at the entire landscape of the Eastern Conference, at least at this point, if I'm Cleveland, I'm not really worried at this point. As long as I can get back up to the top four in the East, there shouldn't be any issue moving forward.
Absolutely. And in terms of the makeup of the team and how Joe Harris might fit into it, there's been some talk in this town that perhaps he could sort of be the Mike Sanders of the team, similar to in the early 90s, the last time that there was the really great prolonged run before LeBron. People tend to think of Hot Rod Williams as being a starter on that team, but he was actually a sixth man. It was Mike Sanders who was in there, who was the most unheralded of the starting five guys. But again, this Joe Harris certainly brings you better offense than did Sanders, who was pretty much a defensive role player on those teams. Let's not forget also, he's been hurt a little bit recently, but Matthew Dellavedova, the team has been going small a decent amount and playing him and Kyrie together in the backcourt. That could be another role as well. And as far as how things might fit with Deion Waiters with this team or might not fit, some talk about how he might be the answer to the rim protection issues that have been raised prior to the season via trade. Some talk about possibly Roy Hibbert coming to this team. You look at the ability of K-Love, of Varejao, some of the guys in there, Tristan Thompson, to get rebounds. And in that sense, they're good defensively, but all of them are a little bit kind of undersized for the five. Do you see that being an issue where the team is going to have to go out and get somebody, or might those guys internally with Brendan Haywood eventually be enough?
Ultimately, in my assessment of that, I think it is enough. I think the notion of a rim protector in today's NBA is a tad overused. This isn't like the NBA of the 80s and 90s where you necessarily needed a big guy in the middle to get block shots and get plays on the move. If you look at some of the most recent champions, San Antonio, Miami, and I'm trying to go back mentally. You could even argue the Detroit Pistons when they won their championship in the mid-2000s. They really did not have a big body rim protector. And I think overall is that we constantly there's no discussion that big men aren't important in the NBA anymore. They very much are. And if you were to look over the landscape of the league, there are still very few big men that you can classify as rim protectors.
That is true. There's not many of them out there. And, again, that would be perhaps the one thing that would just absolutely ice things for the Cavs, not just in the Eastern Conference, but perhaps overall. But, the reason that we've spent the amount of time on them we have thus far is that when you're looking at the Eastern Conference, again, they entered the season as the overwhelming favorites to come out of the East. I think that is pretty much a consensus. There was a thought that if anybody was going to give them a run, it would be Chicago, and thus far at 7-3, they've been kind of holding up to that, even with some of the questions about Derrick Rose and his tendency to sit a little bit so far. I know coming into the year, I'm going to give you a lot of credit for this because Toronto's sitting there at 8-2. You were saying, hey, not so fast. It might be Toronto playing the Cavs in the East Finals as opposed to Chicago. Thus far, those three teams have the best records in the Eastern Conference at this point. Give me your assessment of Toronto versus Chicago and what you saw in them that made you say that to me coming into the season.
Well, regarding the Raptors, I think last year a lot of people tended to disregard them, mainly because, as you can probably understand, too, is that they're not all – the team that does not have a lot of household names, unless you follow the NBA very specifically. But their series last year with the Brooklyn Nets, it was clear to a lot of people that they were the better team. It's just the amount of jitters and the amount of issues that they had going into that seven-game series and some of the opportunities they let slip away. They were a much better team than they were last year. And I think overall with Toronto, if you were to look at the Eastern Conference in terms of just overall balance, I still think they have the best balance of any team overall. You have guys like DeRozan and Terrence Ross. Lowry, I think, is the best. Arguably, you could make an argument right now that Kyle Lowry might be the best point guard in the NBA at this point. But the major point I always like to make with people regarding Toronto is their bench. They have a lot of great guys coming off the bench. A lot of people forgot Lou Williams is now there. He's going to be a spark plug to get them good shots. James Johnson, who's had a couple big dunks already earlier during the early portion of the season. And they have a guy like Tyler Hansbrough who can just mix it up between a lot of guys. The real issue for them moving forward is going to be two things. One, how they are going to be able to get over the hump because they are still a very young team. Dwayne Casey is a veteran head coach, but they're going to need to take that next step at some point to be determined if they can be champions at any point in the next 3 to 4 years. And the major thing for them, too, is that they're a great rebounding team, but at times they struggle to score points in the post. So if they could possibly acquire a guy that can be a consistent guy underneath and get them those tough buckets. They are a very scary team in my estimation.
They really are. Are they at all representative of teams looking at San Antonio and thinking, hey, maybe we can do that. Maybe that's a viable path going forward in the league right now as far as playing it with the depth? Because as you've indicated, I mean, whether or not Kyle Lowry might be the best point guard in the East at the moment, that's kind of a fleeting thing. There's really not a true difference maker on this team, and it's hard to see him or DeRozan or anybody else getting to that level of being a top five, top 10 player in the league. Is there that sense for teams out there like Toronto that San Antonio presents a viable blueprint for what they want to accomplish?
I don't necessarily think it's a viable blueprint because, to know for San Antonio, during their run of championships, they had two overall number one can't-miss players in Tim Duncan and David Robinson. But I think a lot of teams right now are noticing that instead of trying to necessarily build to try and get that superstar talent, what you can do and what Indiana's done recently is just collect enough good players to get yourself competitive and make a deep playoff run. Because let's be honest, there are certain locations in periods of time in the NBA's history where it's going to be where teams with superstars have won titles. We all know that. But let us not forget that there have been a bunch of teams who have won titles in the league and not had big-name stars. The teams like the Sonics of the late 70s, the Detroit Pistons of the early 2000s, and I mean, there always seems to be, as long as you can build a team with enough quality guys, they can do it. And especially with the nature of Toronto right now as a city, and I like to call it the Drakeification of Toronto, that this is a fan base right now really excited to see basketball. They really are, and I think if they can harness that home court advantage that they currently have in Toronto and they can make moves, this could be the team that we talk about if Cleveland falters either this year or next year, that they could be competing for the NBA championship.
Absolutely. You know, again, with Toronto's kind of multicultural nature, they have really, the greater Toronto area has been a decent hotbed in recent years for providing NBA talent. Ironically, some of the big names out of that have all worn the wine and gold, however fleetingly. Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, Tristan Thompson. You don't tend to think of the greater Toronto area as being a decent enough hotbed for that, but as the area itself has sort of gotten more diverse, so too has it been an area that's been cranking out NBA caliber talent.
Right, and I think overall, especially, Toronto's in a very unique situation. There are very few times in professional sports where an entire nation is represented by one team. Since the Grizzlies are now not in Vancouver anymore, they have this huge swath of a fan base now in the Canadian area. And it feels to me that if they can find a way to get over that hump that we always talk about teams needing to go over, they have all the makings of being a really good team, and you have to give credit to their GM, Masai Ujiri, and you have to see how this team is built. It's very, like you noted San Antonio, the team that came to my mind really recently was sort of like Suns of the early 2000s during Nash's original run. They don't play the same style of offense, mind you, but the just incredible depth that both teams had. Normally in the NBA, if you have your starting five, if once a lot of teams go to the bench, that's where they falter. And you can probably agree with me that this, so far in the early season of the NBA, we've seen teams getting absolutely blown out. The one thing with Toronto so far is that they have not been, I know, you know, they recently lost to Chicago by a wide margin, but I like to say Chicago is a really good team right now. But I think they just overall have more question marks based on the health of Derrick Rose. And you also have to note that they still need to figure out what they're going to try and do to beat some of these Eastern Conference teams.
That's true. And that loss that they suffered in their home opener to the Cavs is a very interesting reminder that the Cavs are the hump that they pretty much have to get over, not just in the Central Division, but in the East overall. I had a bit of a misnomer there for a second when I said Toronto, Chicago, Cleveland are the best records at present in the East. Of course, who I left out, at 7-2 at the moment, the Washington Wizards. And looking at the rest of the East, I'd like to start with Washington. Is there anybody else? Let's go ahead and, I think, put the Cavs on that line in the Eastern Conference Finals right now, because barring injury, you have to believe they're going to be one of the two teams there. Is Washington a viable contender along with Toronto and Chicago for the other spot, given how they're playing without Bradley Beal thus far? Or is there anybody else in the East that could make enough noise possibly to end up there?
I mean, I think overall, I think you're pretty much spot on that Washington, considering they haven't had their sharpshooter Bradley Beal for early in the season. They have the makeup of a very rough and rugged team that could cause a lot of problems for a lot of teams. And you have to give credit, John Wall has had a great start to his season. They have a lot of great depth, as very similar to Toronto in that aspect. But I think overall the thing with the Wizards too is that they do have issues struggling to score at times. And they have to make sure that overall they're able to space the floor well, get good shots, but they also have to play that rough and, you know, rough and rugged sort of basketball, like similar to what I would think the Detroit Pistons of the 80s are today. So I think Washington is one of those teams that can be there at the end. I just still think that they're still a little bit away, just a little bit.
Absolutely, and they're not exactly complete opposites, but they are sort of the anti-Toronto when you get into Toronto having depth, them not having as much depth. They have basically the big upside of Wall and Beal and what they can become, maybe greater upside than any of the Toronto players have. So it's an interesting sort of contrast there, and if they meet up in the playoffs, it should be a real treat. Before we leave the Eastern Conference, I know from talking to you off air, I know we wanted to spend a minute or so talking about Philadelphia and philosophically the whole thing, a team that is 0-9 right now, a team that, again, to phrase it generously, was not being built for this year. And, again, looking at hoping to get another high draft pick to continue to add to what they have, assuming that they don't completely destroy MCW as a player and basically just get him into the old Clipperitis thing of days gone by, to where he turns into like a Lamond Murray who just can't ever be a winner because of what he's gone through. Assuming that that doesn't happen, you look at the upside of some of the guys that they have there and what they could be looking forward to in terms of draft picks, and it could be a bright future in Philadelphia, but certainly the way that they're doing it is something that always causes a lot of bile around the league when teams are throwing around the word tanking.
Right, and I think overall there is some discussion regarding tanking and regarding that. I've never really cared overall for the discussion, because you have to know your situation sometimes, and at the end of the day, if you can't necessarily get the job done, you sometimes have to find other ways of trying to get the job done. And I think Philadelphia right now, they've realized that currently with the way the Eastern Conference is going right now, they're not going to be among the top eight teams anytime soon. So I think they figure that, well, they're a very good team. They have the chance to be, you know, they're not going to break through in the next 2 to 3 years at this point. So I think they're thinking what a lot of people have thought for years, is that if you're not going to do well, you might as well acquire as many assets as possible. The real thing at this point, I think, for Philly is that they're not a good team. This could be the first team we see go 0-82. I know that sounds crazy, but considering how weirdly they've played at periods of time, just with inconsistency, and their last most recent loss against Houston was very telling, that they pretty much blew a 4-point lead with less than a minute to play with bad mistakes and turnovers. But it seems, at least with Philadelphia, there are good times ahead coming for Philly fans, but you're going to have to suffer through a couple more bad seasons.
Absolutely, and I will tell you this. I was in a sports bar recently where they were showing a number of different games on one night, and for Philadelphia, it was showing the post game. I don't know. I think it's the Comcast affiliate there in Philly that carries them. And I was looking at the analysts on there for the post game and thinking to myself, I'd like to see a picture of these guys at the end of the season. Probably like those pictures they throw up of presidents. You know, Obama's first day in office, Obama now, George W. Bush on his first day of office, and how he looks now. Those guys are going to age about 20 years covering this historically bad team and having to go on the post game show every night and try to find nuggets of good things to say, because that's what you have to do when you're the TV affiliate guys. You have to go on there and try to point to the positives, even when they don't exist. In terms of a segue to the West here, let's go bad on bad, because while it was a great rivalry in the early 80s here with Philadelphia and the Lakers, we didn't expect that to be a battle for the number one pick this year in the draft. Kobe coming back, he's been healthy thus far, hasn't had another catastrophic breakdown anyways. I looked at them as a team that was borderline at best to make the playoffs, because it was just an odd roster composition, but I don't think anybody expected the depth of what we've seen thus far. What's your thought about what's going on in Lakerland? Obviously, it hurts not to have Julius Randle, with him cracking his stick the first night of the season, but, you know, it's not like he was supposed to be a big difference maker early on. There's no real reason on paper the team should be this bad.
Right, and I think a lot of people, especially with L.A., they feel that, you know, not that necessarily this team is better than their record surmises. It's more along the lines, I think, is that they need to try and turn the corner at this point. They're getting back Nick Young next week, so that should help the scoring load. But I think overall it's still a very hodgepodge sort of team. A lot of guys who, you know, don't necessarily know what their roles are at the current period of time. But I think also we all know, too, is that if Kobe's going to stay there till the end of his career, the Lakers need another big piece. And unless they can acquire someone through the free agent market, which, of course, Los Angeles is always a hotbed for free agent talent, the real thing for them is that they also have to build through the draft. They have to look towards the future. And as a lot of people know, Phoenix has rights to their next year's selection if within certain parameters. So if the Lakers are bad enough to where they keep that pick, they can essentially turn their season around next season.
Absolutely. And they do potentially have that to look forward to for the end of Kobe's career, depending on how long he can keep it going, and the fact that the salary cap should rise exponentially starting in 2016. So if Kobe's got another 3-4 years left in him, granted, again, he'll be, you know, more of a marginal contributor at the end of his career, but he may have a chance to be on a winner again with the life cycle of how the Lakers can put it together, minus old man Buss, who unfortunately is no longer with us. At the top of the Western Conference, you have Memphis at 9-1, Houston at 8-1, both surprises to certain extents, probably Memphis more so than Houston, because Houston, at least theoretically on paper, with Harden and Howard, was capable of putting together a run, albeit, of course, they're thinner than last year without Chandler Parsons. Do you think both of these teams are for real in terms of the season in the race to get the number one seed in the Western Conference?
I think overall they are contenders, and I don't think anyone's going to not call them contenders at this period of the game. I don't really think either are really two big surprises. Houston, we all know they have Dwight Howard. They have James Harden. In their situation, maybe it was addition by subtraction with Chandler Parsons. Trevor Ariza has played really well to start. Their bench has played much better with Isaiah Cannon and Kostas Papanikolaou coming off the bench, providing that sort of five-tool type player. And maybe at least Houston at this period of the game, if they can build a big enough lead where they take out and win the Southwest, if they can put together a deep run in the playoffs, they should have a very legitimately to good shot to go to the NBA Finals. In regards to Memphis, I don't think anyone's really too surprised. I think last year, due to Marc Gasol's injury, we kind of all forgot that Memphis is Memphis. There were periods where they've won over 50-plus games in a year. And it just seems to me overall that they've had an incredibly balanced team. Mike Conley is starting to come into his own. Their acquisition of Vince Carter in the offseason was a big pickup for them to provide scoring off the bench. And it was very telling, especially during Courtney Lee's 0.3 game winner. They trailed Sacramento, a team that was pretty much cruising throughout the entirety of the game, that they were able to come back from that big of a margin. That's one of those statement games you make to your conference saying, hey, we're here, we're ready to go. And there was discussions for years now that Memphis might be that team that cracked through San Antonio. Let's remember they eliminated them in the first round a couple years ago. And it feels to me that if San Antonio falters, and since due to OKC's injuries issues, we don't know what their situation is, they should be the favorites to win the West at this point.
Well, exactly. And before we look at some of the other teams that presently would be in the playoff picture as early as it is, let's talk about the big guns from last year sitting on the outside looking in. OKC 3-7, that's to be expected with no Duncan and no Westbrook at this point. as horrific as that is. Clearly, they're just trying to stay above water or close to it until those guys get back. Phoenix at 5-5, a little bit of a letdown relative to expectations thus far. Not much, particularly with the small sample size, but you might have thought that they would have been in the top eight. San Antonio at 5-4. Is there much reason for any of those three teams to be gripping right now, particularly when you figure that Sacramento, who is as untested as anybody, is sitting in front of all of them?
I don't think any of those teams, if you had to ask them point by point, are really truly worried at this period of time. Because mainly overall, we always see this. There's always 2 to 3 teams early in the NBA season that usually go up really high and then fall really fast. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to at least look at the fact that a lot of these other teams, OKC, I think OKC right now is a bigger question mark than most because Durant's injury is one of those like really tough injuries to see how well he's going to progress from that. Westbrook is Westbrook. He's always been injured through most of his career. And they have a good bench team, but they ran into a rash of injuries I have never seen in the NBA. So it's going to be interesting for OKC coming up. I think they have enough with Reggie Jackson, Jeremy Lamb, Steven Adams to at least get into the playoffs, and they're going to be a very dangerous team. But I just think they're still a year away from making another legitimate run back to the finals. Because those injuries that both Westbrook and Durant suffered are really terrible things that they need to make sure that they keep an eye on, because if those injuries continuously hamper those guys, I think you might have to blow it up at some point.
I think very possibly, yeah. And there don't seem to be any other teams on the outside looking in that really merit a lot of discussion as far as playoff teams at this point. So what I'd like to do is look at 7 and 8 right now, because they're a very interesting case study. New Orleans at 5-3. We expected them to step up this year, and Anthony Davis is really getting closer and closer to the kind of player that he's going to develop into. Of course, one of the very, very best in the league, and probably in league history if he stays healthy. I want to give credit to FDH Director of Research Nate Noy, who, when everyone else was comparing him to Dikembe Mutombo, he was saying Hakeem Olajuwon because he thought he would develop an offensive game to match, and it looks like he's starting to do that. You've got New Orleans at 7 being keyed by him, and a pretty good offensive lineup on paper. Sacramento in the 8th seed at 6-4. To me, a much, much, much bigger surprise, albeit they've been one of the, I'd say a team in the top half of the league in skill, basically going back forever, but just a team that is probably the worst in the league over that period of time at really meshing. So do you see either of these teams being for real as far as teams that we should be looking at playing games in April and May?
I still think overall both are very raw. If you had to put a situation in front of me and said pick one, I would say the Pelicans, just because they have a better depth, and Anthony Davis has been absolutely incredible. Currently, here's a stat for you, Rick. He's currently in the top 5 of scoring, rebounding, and block shots. That
wow.
has not been duplicated in a long time. I you have to go back to the Hakeem, I believe, to even be near those numbers. So overall, I still think if Anthony Davis and the Pelicans can make that big sort of push, they can be a very dangerous team. They have a lot of balance. Last year's roster, I don't think, was indicative of what this team is pushing forward at this point. They have Jrue Holiday. They have a guy like Omer Asik coming off the bench, Ryan Anderson, who went through a lot recently due to his injuries and the suicide of his girlfriend. There was a great piece by Sports Illustrated Chris Ballard about that.
Yes.
He can be
mm-hmm.
that guy that can be that stretch four that can definitely force people to come away from the basket and make great shots. Overall, I still think they're going to need to go through their growing pains like a lot of other teams and what Sacramento is currently dealing with right now. But they have a very legitimate shot to make a deep run if they can get those guys. In response to Sacramento, I think they're an early season surprise. I don't think anyone should be surprised when you have a team with DeMarcus Cousins and Rudy Gay and Ben McLemore. You should be at least a competitive enough team in the Western Conference to at least get over the hump or at least be in that playoff talk. And you have to give a lot of credit. They did give away Isaiah Thomas essentially at the end of the year to go to Phoenix. But Darren Collison has played absolutely fantastic in his role as their starting point guard. Good defense. has the ability to get to the basket. That might have been the issue that they needed. And I still think they have a young team, and there are a lot of pieces still falling into place. But at this point, if they can build and continuously go on this plan that their owner Vivek Ranadive and their GM Pete Alessandro have them on, they're going to be a very good team in the next 3 to 4 years.
Absolutely. Having the pieces fit together has always been the issue there, and it sounds very easy to talk about, but again, they've just had too many young guys who all wanted the ball and weren't good at playing off of it, and maybe finally they're getting that chemistry that they've been lacking. To bring it full circle here to the last real element we needed to talk about, let's call it the upper middle class of the Western Conference, looking 3 through 6 teams that were expected to be in the mix of at least the Western Conference semifinals going into the next year. Golden State, Portland, Dallas, and the Clippers all playing fairly well so far. The Clippers at 5-3, the worst record of those four teams. And again, for a team possibly expected to contend for the number one seed, although it's very, very, very early, maybe a slight disappointment in terms of record, but again, the sample size is minuscule, not even 1/10 for them thus far. What are your thoughts on those four, and if they're shaping up, if any of them are shaping up to be possible title contenders?
Right. Since we talked about the Clippers, let's just lead off with them. I think overall they're a very good team. They are a contender in the West. The real issue that a lot of people have called out, Charles Barkley recently spoke about this on Inside the NBA, that team is going to have to go through Blake Griffin. If Blake Griffin can expend his offensive game and just become the terror of a player that he probably should be, this team should be going to the NBA Finals. My real question is their bench is really iffy at times. If you look down the line, there's a bunch of really solid players, but there's no superstar. I know they've had issues so far this year at the small forward position. They've been rotating Matt Barnes, Jamal Crawford. You saw a little bit of Chris Douglas Roberts there for a second. So I'm not really sure. If there's a coach to get this together, Doc Rivers is that coach. The real issue for them moving forward is that they're still a team that I feel are more ahead in their heads than they are on paper. They're a great team. They have a lot of great pieces. But at some point, let's not forget, this team has only won one first-round playoff series in the last 4 years. This team has to be, I think that very similar to the OKC situation, they have to be much more further along than they currently are.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. As far as the other teams that are just ahead of them in the West, you, of course, are exposed to the Trailblazers on an up-close basis all the time there. Your thoughts on them about being 7-3, Golden State 7-2, Dallas 7-3. A lot of people thought coming into the season it might perhaps be San Antonio, Oklahoma City, at least before the Durant and Westbrook injuries, and perhaps the Clippers being the co-favorites in the West. Are there any of those three teams that could possibly crack in there and be the last team standing at the end?
I think overall, my personal favorite, again, coming through at this point, has to be Golden State. Again, I know I'm in the Portland Basin, so the Portland Basin people aren't going to be happy with me on that one.
Right.
They have played exceptionally well. And I was personally on the fence as Steve Kerr getting the head coaching job. But so far, Steve Kerr has done a fantastic job molding this team to be higher in the offensive efficiency rating, which they never were under Mark Jackson, and still getting enough play. Andrew Bogut has played exceptional so far this year. You have to give, when you have Curry and Thompson, you're always going to have guys who can make shots. And you're seeing right now the emergence of Draymond Green. Draymond Green, I loved him at Michigan State. He was a great guy, and I felt personally overall, if you can use his set of skills, you use his tools, he can be a difference maker. And so far, if you've watched Golden State games this year, he has been a difference maker. And they're still, and to note something that a lot of people haven't, they've done most of this without David Lee. David Lee still hasn't played a game this year. And if they can, run this sort of offense under Steve Kerr, who, as a quick note, became the first rookie head coach to go 5-0 to start his coaching career. If he can get it going, they're going to be a really good team. Switching quickly, I'm going to go to Dallas. I'll end up with Portland last. I like Dallas. Dallas is a very solid team across the board. I love the acquisition of Jameer Cat, a.k.a. Jameer Nelson. And the way that they started the season was a little bit off, but they put together a really solid lineup. And if you have Dirk Nowitzki, who just got into the top 10 all-time in scoring in NBA history, you're going to have a shot. Everyone's not going to, you know, deem you as the favorites, but I think in comparison to last year's team, this Dallas team is much deeper, a little more athletic, and if they can be solid enough throughout the rest of the year, they're going to put a lot of scares in a lot of teams. Let's not forget, this was a team that almost eliminated San Antonio in the first round last year.
Yeah,
and they're going to be, you know, they have a shot to make a big impression if they can push through. In regards to Portland, they had their issues on earlier in the season. Damian Lillard was not shooting well. But this team, at least judging from last year on paper, you'd look at it and you would say, well, this team's okay. It's not really – they didn't really get that much better. But the acquisitions of Steve Blake and Chris Kaman have been huge for notoriously the Blazers being the worst bench scoring team in the NBA in the last couple of seasons. If they can mesh, and everyone should be talking about, if they can make a huge push with Marcus Aldridge as a possible MVP candidate, they have a really legitimate shot to make a deep run. The real issue that I've always had with them, and like I've noted only a few seconds ago, their bench is not good. If their bench does not support them in the Western Conference playoffs, they will not win a playoff series.
Absolutely. That could be something to look at the trading deadline. And, of course, great point on Aldridge because that sort of defines their upside. So goes Aldridge, so goes the Portland Trail Blazers because it is, again, in the end, a league of difference makers. And going back to what we were talking about Philadelphia before, that's what all teams are reaching for. And the really bad teams are going to be as bad as they need to for as long as it takes to get a guy like that in the draft, which is just about the
and
only way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think we have to note, too, Rick, that Lillard had a really slow start to his year. Last night against Brooklyn pretty much carried the team with no Batum and no Aldridge. So they have the pieces. They really do. But like I've noted, their bench is going to be their problem. They're going to need a chief acquisition at some point to maybe put them over the top.
Absolutely. And it becomes a question then of do you want to leverage future draft picks to make that happen, take on salaries, what's going to be the route to try to do that. But, again, this start to the season has been very intriguing. I see nothing thus far that really throws much of a halt into my pick of Cavs over Clippers in the finals. But, again, it's going to be a long, interesting march to get to that point. Great fun breaking it down with you, Ben Chu of that NBALotteryPick.com. And best of luck. I know there's a lot of great stuff going on the site and more great stuff all the time. Thanks very much for being on today, my friend.
Oh, no problem, Rick. And if we've learned anything so far about the NBA season, if you can shoot, you can score.
Yeah, we've certainly seen that in spades. Some very, very explosive efforts thus far. And as we continue to move through November into December and then eventually the second half of the season, it will be really intriguing to keep an eye on. Thanks very much, Ben, for being a part of it today. Thank you all for joining us today for FDH Lounge mini episode number 491.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.